Get snacking and get cracking with a snack that packs a protein punch. Pistachios are known for their protein power, fiber, and better-for-you unsaturated fats for a combination that may help you keep feeling fuller longer. Wonderful Pistachios is a good source of protein with zero guilt. Each one-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. I love that they come in a variety of sizes and flavors, making this the perfect protein snack for any on-the-go adventure. Check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Flow Track podcast, recapping Friday's action from the U.S. Olympic trials. I'm Kevin Sully. He's Gordon Mack. And in honor of today's action, we're going to restart the beginning of the show 4 to 5 times due to overly sensitive blocks, just to get things, make sure the start is perfect before we can proceed on to the rest of the show. So, Gordon, can you do another intro for me, please? Because that one wasn't good enough.
That was a great intro. Why are we doing it again? What? I'm confused.
That's some starter humor at the top, Gordon. There were a lot of false starts in the high hurdles, and there were a lot of false starts in the women's low hurdles. We thought they got it figured out after the high hurdles. You feel bad for the athletes out there again and again and again. There was only one DQ total after 9 false starts. It was something that you see often in track meets, but you don't expect to see it at the biggest stage, and we did.
It's true. We did see. I mean, what was the reason? I mean, are they going to come out? I don't think they're ever going to come out the reason. Maybe they'll say it on the broadcast tomorrow, but you think that, like, they would recognize, like, this, they would switch out the blocks? Are the odds that the blocks that were causing the malfunction in that short hurdles, also the ones in the 400? I don't know. You just think? I don't know. Sometimes sensitive. The good old pen and paper, you know, you get your little stick with your number on it, like in cross country style. Maybe we should start timing meets like that. None of this automatic digital block shit that we do.
Yeah.
Go back to the old school days, you know.
Live by technology, die by technology. Thanks everybody for joining us live on YouTube. If you got questions, put them in the chat as we go through today's show. We will try to get to them. We're going to start first with the men's steeple final. We'll talk about the men's 1500, of course, with the Centro look to Cole Hawker. Gordon will break down all the qualifying scenarios. We'll talk about Gabby Thomas and Jenna Prandini lighting a match in that women's 200. Arian Knighton breaking a Noah Lyles record in a race with Noah Lyles. And we'll talk about some hurdle prelims as well, though. Let's kick it off, though, Gordon, with the steeple chase. Men's final today. The team is Hilary Bohr, Bernard Keeter, and Mason Furlick. What'd you think of that final today?
I mean, it was kind of a little bit, it's kind of similar to that women's race, right? Where you kind of had the obvious top two eventually late in the race with Keeter and Bohr, similar to Coburn and Frericks. And then it was a battle for third, and Furlick, Michalski, Updike, Cabral was somewhat in there a bit. Mm-hmm. We're kind of battling for that third spot. And you could just tell, man, the steeple, it's all about that final 130-some meters, 150 meters from the water pit to the finish line. That's where all of the teams are either made or lost, people qualifying or not qualifying. It's all in that final 150. He saw that with Furlick. He was neck and neck with two other guys, and as soon as he hit that final water jump, he was free. And Hilary Bohr making the team once again, back-to-back Olympic qualification. I was gonna say champion, back-to-back Olympic teams. Pretty cool for Bohr. And his teammate Bernard Keeter, who has had a great build up to this moment, kind of was, you know, a solid guy in college at Texas Tech, wasn't really doing much, and then slowly he got fourth in 2019, and now here getting second at the Olympic trials. A good way for Keeter to kind of you know, capsule his journey to gold, as Tracktown USA says, hashtag journey to gold.
And Furlick gets that final spot, fifth in 2019 as well, ninth in 2017, and then fifth at the 16 trials. So he's been close a couple times. And I thought going into the race, because of Furlick's 1500 meter speed, he just needed to be close in that last 100. And that's exactly what happened. He was right there, but there was the guys on his back, but they were not able to mount a charge. Once Furlick went, you know, he closed that gap. I think Keter was really comfortable. He's celebrating pretty early. I think he had latched on to Bohr and was pretty confident. I have two, though, takeaways from this race as it pertains to Evan Jaeger, who's not actually in the race. But it's just interesting because you see these guys fourth and fifth the last time this race was run for a berth on a U.S. team. And right there, you see the impact. Obviously, Jaeger wasn't there in 19, but you see an impact of some of these injuries and or retirements as well, too, like we saw with Andy Bear. Like, some spots opened up and they were able to take advantage of. The other Jaeger takeaway is, I think we assume everybody who had his 5K pedigree is going to become Evan Jaeger. And I'm referring, of course, to Sean McGordy. It's like, it was an easy comparison to make. A guy makes a late transition to the steeplechase from running flat events, and you think, okay, just plug and play, he's going to be awesome. Had a great debut, just like Jaeger did back in 2012, but he stayed about the same, we could say, as he did from his debut, which just shows it's hard. Like, Jaeger was an outlier. You can't expect everybody to make that transition into the steeple. It's its own animal. It's an entirely different challenge. And yeah, having that flat speed helps, but, you know, running sub 8:15, running 8:10, or as in Jaeger's case, almost breaking 8 flat, that takes a rare talent. Yeah, you got to be good at the 5K, but you also have to have these, obviously, skills that play well out in the 5K or in the 3K steeple. Because I think going in, you and I both thought McGordy. We said it after his first race, said it after his second race. The prelim was a weird situation, so you kind of put that aside, and he closed so well there, we thought he'd be fine. But he finishes seventh in this race.
Yeah. Do you think this is his future for McGordy? Do you think he's going to be going all in on the steeple in 2022? Or you think he'll have like a Josh Thompson type revelation and be like, hey, abandon the steeple, let's go back into the 15 and try to make teams that way? And for McGordy, I guess, like, hey, it's become a 5:10 guy. I mean,
yeah,
do you think
it's funny,
you abandon ship now, or do you keep going?
I think you give it a few more. You give it a few more, because just because he didn't take to it right away doesn't mean he's never going to take to it. And he's got opportunities next year, early in this, or even the rest of this season. Right now he's not on the team, but you think he'd be fast enough to get into some higher profile steeples. Maybe he can give it a shot. But yeah, you bring up Thompson. It's funny. Okay, this analog to Jaeger doesn't work. So let's throw another Bowerman person at him. Maybe he's not Evan Jaeger. Maybe he's Josh Thompson, the guy who was miscast in his role as steepler and then came back to be one of the best 1500 meter runners in the country. You're right. Maybe that's true. Maybe he's going to go back to the five and find some more success there. Low 13s guy. I mean, do we think the U.S. men's 5,000 right now is incredibly deep? Probably not. And he's training with a lot of the best guys in the event, so he'll have a good gauge on what he can do moving forward. But just, it was just interesting to look at his arc, because his arc in the steeple just started a couple months ago. But the three guys going to Tokyo, Bohr, Keter, and Mason Furlick in that men's steeple, which was the only running event final of the evening. We got a good, this is a good gift here, because his Twitter handle is Hey Big Bird. And there is Furlick coming off the last water pit. Yeah, you're right, though. Like, the guys who get momentum and the women who get momentum off that last water barrier versus the people who are stalling out, it looks like one person's running downhill and one person's running uphill, basically. That's a terrifying gif. Now that I've watched it 6 times in a row, that's nightmare fuel right there.
Yeah, imagine that happened in real life. Imagine being a kid and seeing that, like, oh, not be going to watching PBS anymore since then. Anyway, big ups to those three: Bohr, Keter, and Furlick. But we had a lot of prelims. Mm-hmm. More interesting prelims, I think, than yesterday's prelims. We got a little more people getting knocked out, some notable names qualifying, not qualifying. What prelim do you want to talk about first?
Let's start with the men's 15. first heat, get that out of the way. First here, Engels had a really sneaky move there with 100 to go, getting around Holt there, had to basically shrink himself in half and turn sideways to get through there. It was like he was like in a crowded men's room basically and didn't want to touch any walls or anybody, like the way he got through there with 100 to go. Nagus, Alexander, Sieti, Ribic qualify automatically, and then Suleiman and Avila had to wait for heat two. And we said yesterday, death heat was in heat two.
Yeah,
that's exactly how it played out. Now, heat two didn't do themselves any favor, Gordon, because what did they go out at in heat two?
207.
You knew after a lap, you said to me, they're only getting five. They're only getting five in this heat. And before we focus on the people up front, the first person you noticed falling off was high schooler Hobbs Kessler.
Yeah. He said in his post-race interview that he kind of went straight to the back because, you know, he thought that maybe he was just thinking he wanted to be more conservative, not get boxed in. So he wanted to kind of make sure he had room to make a move when he needed to. But then with such a slow pace and being in the back and the ramp up of speed in the final 700 or 600 meters, he wasn't able just to close that gap. Because when you're that far back and a move is made up front, it takes time for you to see the move. Like, it's like traffic, right? Once the first car goes, even if you're five cars back, you don't get to go until, you know, 5 seconds after. And I think that could done him in. If he would have been more up front with like in the top three or four, when Central makes a move or whoever made the move, you're ready to go right away. But in this situation, I mean, he's young, right? It's literally a high schooler. He's shown that he has the talent. I think it's just you need to get your feet wet. You need to get knocked around. You need to get knocked out in a second round to learn how to be prepared and become, you know, a dominant type talent. I mean, I think Central probably got knocked out. I mean, Central was probably running 4:10 in high school, but not. Mm-hmm. I don't know, how fast did Central run in high school? What was he like in a mile?
He was fat. Well, the difference is by the time Central made it to this sort of stage was 2011, and he was already the NCAA champion, and he had done rounds NCAA after rounds after rounds, and he had run dual meets. I think the 1500 is the hardest event to be a prodigy in, because your race isn't just about you in the 1500. You can try to manage it and you can trot out all the cliches about just need to execute my race plan. But there's so much going on in a 1500 through the rounds and you need to react. It's not enough just to run your race. You need to be able to be flexible and you need to be able to draw on a little bit of experience to know, as you mentioned, when to move and when to sit back. So this is the toughest type of a race for a young person with no experience to wade into. And that's why I said a final would be success for Kessler. Just getting to the final would be success. I think getting to the second round is still a great outcome. He got one extra round of experience than he would if he went out yesterday. But it's not like the 400. It's not like the 100. It's not even like the 5 or the 10, because that you can latch on and the moves that are made aren't as sudden. You can take time, you can take a deep breath and adapt. So Hobbs Kessler got thrown into the deep end here again, and he's going to be back 334. You can do a lot with 334 once you start getting in those rounds and getting in those mucky tactical races, excuse me.
I just want to correct myself. Centro, as we showed on the screen during your talk, he wasn't a 410 miler in high school. He was a 403 mile.
He might stare at you like he stared at Cole Hawker the last 50. I love that. I think that, I mean, Central, first of all, looks great. And if we were talking about this event a couple months ago after he ran the 150, we would have been like, we don't know about Central, but he looked great. Hawker obviously looked strong because Hawker's looked strong all season. I like that they looked at each other dead in the eyes for a moment, and then they started smiling, but there was a beat of just stone cold, I'm not tired, are you tired? Right. And then they
Elon, show the picture.
And then we got the smile going across their faces. I saw someone comparing it to the Bolt and DeGrasse picture from the Olympics. But this is setting up to be an amazing final because they both look so good. I guess there's a little bit of a rivalry going back to the Your Move Central Instagram caption, although I don't think Cole Hawker just got brought into that. it was some kid on the Oregon team who tagged him, and then Central's response had more to do with Tier than it did with Hawker. I think he went out of his way to say Hawker, he likes Hawker. So I don't know if this is just friendly rivalry or this is something more than that, but it certainly added some intrigue to a semifinal heat.
So now it's time to explain the men's 1500 meter final and who would go if they finished top three. So as you know, you finish top three and you're in. But if you don't have the standard, you need to get into your world ranking. We know that Angles, Nagus, Chieti, Centro, Thompson, and Wynn, they all have the standard. So they're top three, they're in. The question is, what about the other athletes? Sam Prekel, Cole Hawker, Eric Avila, Waleed Suleiman, Colby Alexander, and David Rubich. Those six athletes are going into this final without the standard. What would they need to run? Now, let me explain this graphic for you. If you're listening, you may want to go over to YouTube. It's a big graphic. I'm going to explain it. There are three situations. First, the first thing we need to talk about is we need to figure out if the 45th best athlete in the world, what their ranking is, how many points they have. Now, I looked at the math. There's some national championships going on. Some movement might happen. The 45th time cutoff is going to be a person with a point ranking points of either 1,213, 1,209, or 1,202. 1,213 being the best, 1,202 being the worst. So we don't know because we have to wait on the rest of the world to finish their races, but the 45th cutoff mark is going to be somewhere around 1,213 points to 1,202 points. And if you look at this, if the cutoff is at the extreme of like the best, 1,213, the six athletes, Avila, Suleiman, Alexander, Rybic, there's no ranking that they could get that's going to be good enough. They just have to run the standard to get in. So they won't be able to get in on world ranking because it's going to be too hard to get. But Hawker and Prekel, Prekel can get in no matter what he runs. He could get third place and run 5 minutes and he'll get in because his ranking's high enough. But Cole Hawker, he's the one that's in a unique situation. And he also could be top three. In the worst case scenario for him, he needs to run sub 342 and win, run sub 340 and get second, or run sub 340 low and get third. So basically, he needs a 340 or faster race in order to ensure a top three finish gets him in on world ranking. The rest of the guys, they need the standard, so they're not even involved. But you can kind of look at the situation on this graphic. If the cutoff is 1,213 points, he needs to be running in the 340 to 342 range. If it's 1,209 points, he needs to be running 341 to 343 range. And if it's 1,202 points, he could run any time and get it. So Hawker's in a decent spot. You have to imagine we're going to see a 340 type time be top three. I don't think we're going to see a 350. No, I think Avila, Suleiman.
We saw he go 342.9 tonight.
We did.
I wouldn't take anything for granted in terms of speed of a 1500 final. It could go it could go anywhere. It could go 350. It could go 330. We just don't know. But you like his odds over everybody else. But the big thing is first he has to get top three, and it's going to be difficult enough just to get top three because these guys look sharp. Angles, there was a tactical snafu there, putting himself on the rail there with 100 to go. But that seems par for the course with him, and he manages to thrive in that sort of chaos. Thompson closed really well. Obviously, we talked about Centro, Nagus. For those joining late, those are the people who don't have the standard. So there's another group that obviously has the standard, and all they need to do is finish top three. Because if this thing goes Centro, Nagus, and Josh Thompson, then Gordon's spreadsheet goes directly into the trash.
Yeah.
Here is – so we got the image here. Here is Craig Engels trying to squeeze his way through Rybich and Holt there. And he – I didn't see him touch anybody either, which when you look from this image, and maybe he brushed shoulders and I just couldn't see it. But if there was any contact, it was minuscule. And you look at that picture and it seems like the odds of him touching somebody are about 99%. And yet Engels has, again, perfected the squeezing both shoulders together, running really fast and slightly leaning sideways to avoid contact move.
Looks like he's trying to get to the bar first. You know, he's like, ooh, happy hour. We got to get there first because before the crowd gets in.
I think he's trying to get out of the bar bathroom.
Excuse me, trying to get through the crowd. Yeah, that's what it looks like.
This is me at Costco trying to get in line. That's what I'm doing at Costco every Sunday when it gets crowded. Any other men's 1500 points that you want to make before we move on?
No, it's going to be good. I think it's going to be one of the better 1500 finals we've seen. Because obviously you have the vets like an Angles and a Centro, yeah. But the young guys in Nagus and Hocker just kind of add a little more flavor to that final that we haven't seen in a while, right? We haven't seen a Hocker / Nagus talent in the college scene since Centro was in college, I feel. I mean, has there been anyone straight out of college who's been as good as they've been? I don't think so.
Since Centro?
Yeah.
No.
Right?
No.
They've all been international guys. Yeah. Like a Josh Kerr type.
Not in the U.S. system. Here's the thing. If you're a 1500-meter fan, I want you to enjoy this. I want you to take a deep breath and enjoy this because you're getting what you wanted at the beginning of the season. You could complain about, it'd be great if, you know, you had Cooper Tier in there or – so, you know, somebody else was more in shape, whatever. But these guys have been through two rounds now. Like, you know, Centro is fit. You know, Cole Hocker is still fit. You know, Engels is still fit. And look at the start list that you're going to have for the last day of competition. Centro, Thompson, Nagus, Hocker, Cietti, Engels, Wynn, Avila, Ribic, Prakel, Suleiman. You got everybody you wanted, right? You have the guy like Wynn, who we said a couple months ago, don't sleep on him. He ran really fast at the Portland Track Festival. He's a great sleeper pick. But you have those guys that we've wanted to see. None of them went out in the final. All of them look to be in really good shape, and they're all going to converge for three spots on Sunday. And that does not happen all the time in track. So I want the 1500-meter fans out there. I know you're a 5K fan this year, Gordon, so this is not to you. This is to the 1500-meter fans out there. Enjoy it on Sunday because you got it. That didn't happen in the women's 1500. That did not happen in the women's 1500. It was still a great race, but that's pretty much the opposite of what happened in the women's 1500. The men, all the big players are there.
Yep. Next event.
200 time.
Dude, we've done so many podcasts, man. I feel like we've done like – how many hours of content have we created? Like, we're on like almost, you know, Game of Thrones level number of hours.
All right,
we've done over 300 pods. We've done over 300 pods. That's a lot.
That's true.
Hours.
That's true. And I've loved every minute of it. Nova,
I'm sure you have.
Wants us to talk. Asked, have we talked about the 200? We're talking about it right now. So here we go. You joined just in time. Let's start for the women here. After the first round, you could see this trending in one direction, and the direction was fast. But then Thomas and Pranini got even faster. So Gabby Thomas goes 21.94. So she goes back to back PRs. And Pranini joined the sub 22 club. She goes 21.99. So we have an amazing final setting up. And I don't think either of these women expected to be running that fast in the first two rounds. And they ran hard. I don't want to say that they shut it down with 150 to go, but 21.94 and 20, like when you get under, I said it yesterday, when you get under 22, you are in the elite of the elite, which means the team that gets sent is going to be really good because we don't know what all the other women in the world are going to be running. But if you have two women who are capable of sub 22, you have a very solid team. Allison Felix has the third fastest time. And what did Otto Bolden say in the broadcast? He's like, good luck, Allison Felix and everybody else. Cause he's basically calling it now. Thomas and Prandini are going to go 1-2. I don't think there's any reason to disagree with him based on what we've seen in the first two rounds. But then you have this big group there of Felix, Battle, Clark, Bryant, Akinison, and Irby. And I think it's going to be a dogfight for that last spot. I mean, I think Felix can pull it off. She's in a position now to make two different Olympic teams. The one upset was Sturgis not making it through. So the NCAA 200-meter champ will not be in the final. Anellis, who was a finalist at the World Championships back in 2019, she didn't make the final either. But you got a really interesting race up front for these top two spots and then a deep battle for third.
Can you imagine what this final would be like if Sha'Carri Richardson was in it? It'd be insane.
I can. It would be awesome. But I've also like the 200 always get your hopes up and then not everybody shows up. But yeah. I did not anticipate Prandini and Thomas going off. Like, this is amazing to me that they've done this in these first two rounds. Maybe the final drop in times like that, but the fact that they've done it again back to back days. It's been like Prandini's PR. When did her before this weekend? I think Prandini's PR was 2018. So it's been 3 years since she runs as fast as she does, and then she does it in back to back days. And Thomas's curve is insane right now. Prandini's curve is obviously terrific too. But yeah, before this weekend, July 22nd, 2018 was her PB. And then her next fastest time before that was 2015. So you're going deep, 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 deep to find
3 years.
Yeah, I guess that's what it is. 2021 has been good to her. So this is far exceeding my expectations in terms of how fast they were going to be and just how compelling the women's two is going to be. We know the men's two is going to be good based on what happened in the 100. There were some question marks for the women, and these first two rounds have answered a lot of questions already.
Do you think what Gabby Thomas is doing right now, running back-to-back sub-22s, is going to be enough to get her on that 4x1 final? Because she did finish fifth in the 100, so do you think they would be willing? Jenny Prandini was fourth. Javane Oliver and Tiana Daniels were second and third. Is Gabby Thomas doing enough to take away Oliver's or Daniels' spot?
Well, especially if you want a curve person, someone who can run that turn. I don't think anybody's running it better right now in the U.S. We're going to have Serenity back on tomorrow. We'll give her a chance to revise her team. We'll do our 4x1 and 4x4 picks again now that we have a little bit more data. But it's a good problem for the U.S. to have, the fact that their 200 squad features two women who are now sub-22. So I'm excited for that final. Men's 200, first heat. It's all about the first heat, because you had Curley, you had Noah Lyles, and you had Arian Knighton, who stole the show. Ran 20.04. I want to play this bit of sound here, if we could. So before we hit play on it, though, let me set it up just so people know. The mix zone for this meet, ordinarily Gordon and I are there with cameras, or Lincoln, if you remember that guy, walking around interviewing. It's all virtual this year. So athletes, selected athletes, are on separate interviews, separate Zoom interviews. I haven't seen it personally because I'm in Austin, Texas, the first floor of Gordon's beautiful new house he's renting. But what I imagine is there's little stations and they're spread out, but they're one-on-one interviews and you have to type a question in and get the response. Well, here's how these guys did not know how fast Knighton had run. They did not know that Knighton had not only beaten Noah Lyles, but broken his high school record. Then someone in Noah Lyles's media availability mentions it. Noah Lyles realizes what has happened, and then here is what happened next.
I didn't even notice.
That is not what happened next. Let's try it again. Here we go. Here we go.
Hey, Arian. You broke my record, bro.
I did?
Yeah.
What was it?
Mine was 09, yours is 04. Woo! Congratulations.
Hey, thank you.
I didn't even notice.
So nobody noticed on the track. Nobody in the post-race interview on the track or the PA said anything. They were so locked in that they just got to the interview and it was mid-interview. I jumped in the Knighton interview late. I assumed that he knew. I heard that, but I didn't know who was telling it to him. I thought it was a coach or a friend or something. Come to find out, he found out from the person who broke his record or who owned the record before him.
Yeah, and we had a mini controversy internally with our friends over at Milesplit, where they're saying it's technically not a high school record because Knighton is a pro, and I call bullshit. He is a high school junior, 17 years old. He ran 20.04. It's a high school record. Milesplit is calling it a world U18 best. What the hell is it? Come on. World U18 best? It's a high school national record. Let's not get with these semantics.
It's both.
No, it's not. Yeah, it is both. But like, it's a high school record. It's not a World U18 best. It's a high school record. That's what it is. Let's not. Let's get. I bet you if we click on that article, I bet you they have like a technicality. Let's click on it. Let's see if they said it doesn't count as a high school record. Yeah, here we go. While Knighton is currently a pro with Adidas, he still remains in high school. However, his performances do not count in high school record books. Yes, they do.
I mean, someone just made that rule arbitrarily said that his records don't count. Well, okay, here's the thing. And someone, he's in high school. Now, the fact that he's a junior just makes it more obvious. I could see if he was a senior and you're saying, well, after they graduate, maybe the record shouldn't count. But yeah, he's a high school student. This is different than NCAA because NCAA, the age range is so vast and so wide, right? That you could say, all right, this person goes pro as a freshman. They're not competing within the NCAA system anymore. We're going to not count their records. But high school generally gives you an idea of an age range. I know there's some extreme exceptions, right? But you know, it's generally people between, you know, 14 and 18, 18 and a half, maybe getting into to 19. Whereas college, it's going to be just so much more broad given the vast different circumstances. So I'm perfectly fine calling it a high school record. He's in high school. He ran faster than everybody. He's still with his, if you want to go into deeper semantics, he's still with his high school coach. You know, Hobbs Kessler's 334 high school record because he hadn't gone pro yet, but he's training with a pro coach and has pro teammates. So I think we could just cut all this and just say high school record, Arian Knighton. More importantly, Gordon, he might end up on this team. And I saw he'd be the third youngest American men's track Olympian of all time and the youngest since Jim Ryan. And it's in the 200. That's insane.
You want to update your men's 200 top three? Who do you have? Who's your men's 200 top three right now?
Listen, you keep trying to get me to get off of this because of my I'm betting my house on this. I'm still sticking with it. I trust Lyles. He cruised through. He said he was keying off of Curley. That's what he said in the interview, and Curley did not get off to a good start. So I went Lyles, Bednarik, Laird. Look, you can see it there. I'm sticking with Lyles, Bednarik, and Laird. I think Curley clearly has an issue with the curve. And Knighton, I think this is the Spider-Man meme. Knighton 2021 and Lyles 2016. That's what they're pointing at each other, basically. The same thing. So I think Knighton is going to run, and he's going to get fourth in the final here. But I'm going to stick with Lyles and Bednarik and Terrence Laird to get that third spot.
Okay. Terrence Laird kind of been quiet right now. Isn't it weird that he signed with Adidas, but he's still wearing his LSU kit? What's with that? I don't get that.
I don't understand. Can you explain that to me? Either. We got a lot of heated debate now in the chat about high school record or not. Let's not get bogged down and divided by this, folks. This is what the problem is with track and field. Someone makes an arbitrary rule and everybody yells about it for a while. And usually one of those people is my co-host, Gordon, here. The fact is, if you want to go U20, right? Do we accept U20 as like a legit?
Not if you're record. Getting paid, apparently. It's you're not
U20. No. World Junior. Let's just talk about World Junior records. U20, right? He, with the 2004, he ties Ramil Guliev for number two. So Bolt has a record from 04, 1993. Then Bolt ran 1999. Then Bolt ran 2003. And then Guliev, 2004. So that's where Knighton was, or is now. He was 2011. He was a couple spots down. So he's moved. If you want to throw out high school, throw out U18, just throw him into the World Junior pool. He's got a couple more years to run World Junior marks, by the way.
Kevin, just so we're telling our viewers, the list you're looking at on our screen is the 2021 list.
Yeah, I'm talking about
our viewers. I know, but like while you're talking and you see our screen show the 2021 list, you should like cover. You should mention it. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, I wasn't looking at that. I'm focused. My lane, my race. Like what Grant Holloway says. That's what I'm focused on. What did he say today? I came to dance at the party, not stand at the side, not stand on the wall. Which again, I felt attacked as someone who went to many dances and sat on the wall the whole time. Grant, you don't need to make it so personal. Is this the all-time list? This is the all-time list, right?
Yep.
Okay, there we go.
But that list doesn't include today.
Well, okay, they all saw the – I just said he ran 20.04 and he's tied with Ram Oguliev. I think people can mentally put that in there. So there it is. He's going to set a lot of records, it looks like. He's going to be fine. All right, next race. Next race. Women's eight. Thing Mo, cool, calm, collected, won the first heat. Sage Herta fell with 100 to go and collided with Hannah Green. Hannah Green did not qualify, but has since been added, so it's going to be a 9-woman final. In the next heat, Ajay Wilson, 159, just ahead of Kate Grace. So it's hard to tell who looks smoother, who looks better. Wilson talked vaguely in her post-race interview about dealing with issues in the buildup, but she said she didn't want to talk fully about them until the final was over. But yeah, so Hannah Green gets through. Your pick, Gordon, is still alive. How do you feel?
I'm not feeling good about my pick. But hey, OTC finding a way to survive in advance. I saw Ben Blankenship do it from first round to second round. And I see yeah. Hannah Green doing it here from second round to third round. But yeah, looking at the way those two semifinals played out, Ajay, a thing. Raven looked pretty good too, and Kate Grace. Those four, I feel like, look like the strongest, and I think three of those four will be our team between those three, which makes sense.
So you're saying five for three spots?
No, four.
Four.
Okay. A thing, Price. Ajay, Raven Rogers, and Kate Grace.
Okay.
Oh, did I say Chanel Price? I didn't mean to say Chanel Price. I take her off the
well,
list.
No, I would put her in there. Her and Wilson
okay.
both went
sub. Put her back on the list.
Her and Wilson both went sub two. Yeah, I thought going in I was going to say everybody has a chance for that third spot, but there's a clear second tier or at least a blurring of the line to that tier and then that drop off to that next tier where you had Meyer and Akins who ran 201. I'm not anything – after 2016 and this race where there was a big old fall and Kate Grace won that race, by the way, you can always say anything can happen, but Mo and Wilson look really solid. And I agree with you about Grace and Rogers has that just patented late kick. I think the question's going to be, will Rogers be in close enough contention with 100 to go to where she can catch people? Because she still has that kick. It's just staying in contact to use it.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. As she had a really good final 75, but if she doesn't put in a good opening 725, it's going to be all for naught.
Yeah.
I just made that up right now, but you know what I mean.
You know, put that on the back of a shirt, Gordon. I think that's the new slogan for whatever high school needs a slogan for next season. The final 75.
A good 75. It does.
How's it
a final up? 75 needs a great front 725.
Yeah. Well, not even great. About? She just got to be solid. I think she's got to be solid and try to run off of that next group. Because how do you see Mo and Wilson approaching this race? Because the tactics are going to matter here.
I think it's going to be fast. I think Mo is going to run as fast as she possibly can.
That's really it. I set you up and you say, I think it's going to be fast and I think Mo's going to run as fast as she can. I agree. I do think she's going to run as fast as she can.
But I think she's just going to be like, hey.
You think she's going to want
nothing to chance. I'm going to go out. I'm going to try to go out in 58 seconds and I'm going to try to run 157. I think the winning time is going to be 157. And so,
she's going to run some like carnage. Isaiah Jewett.
There's going to be carnage.
She's going to run like Isaiah Jewett, basically. Okay. All right. I could see that. But then don't you think Ajay Wilson would be happy with that? Because she can just sit right on Mo?
Yeah, but I don't think the thing's thinking about pleasing or displeasing Ajay. I think she's thinking the best way to make the team is to get all these fake 159 girls out of the race and run 157. I'm projecting that onto her by calling them fake 159 girls.
But they're real 159 girls. Well, that's the issue. They're real. They're just, you need to be able to run 157 is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Basically, make it a 157 race in the same way Isaiah Jewett made it a 143 race. And that left everybody reacting. We didn't even know Isaiah Jewett was a 143 guy. So that's why that was such a special run. But okay, so Wilson's main focus the last couple of years being able to adapt to a bunch of different racing styles. So that will obviously put it to the test. We've seen her go to the front a lot, but we've also now seen her more be comfortable with reacting. It would just be interesting with Mo with her first go round going that aggressively. But I agree with you because then it gives her a little bit of margin for a little more margin for error, even if things don't go perfectly the last 100. She'll still be able to maintain because she'll have such a good margin.
Agreed.
All right.
What other events happened today? The men's 110 hurdles happened, and it happened like five times in a row because of all the fake false starts, but nothing too crazy out of that race, I think. I mean, no big names really got eliminated. I mean, Robert Dunning from Alabama, he was a DNS. I kind of had him maybe making the team. He's the NCAA champ. Trey Cunningham ran well after not having a good NCAAs. Ran 13:23, a big PB for Trey Cunningham. And then 400 hurdles. I guess start with the women or men.
Did you not talk about Grant Holloway?
What am I supposed to say? You run 13:11. Cool. Like 13:11. Grant Holloway. We're not supposed to talk about Grant Holloway running 13:11. Like that should
mention the guy who wins. Mention the guy who wins is all I'm saying, or the woman who wins.
Grant's better than to be talked about when he runs 13:11. He's just like,
I just thought he looked good. He looked good, and it's just a reminder of how big the margin is. I don't know. I just thought it was worth mentioning. You're like, and here's a guy who got ninth, and then you don't mention the guy.
Well,
who wins.
I mean,
a weird approach to it.
It's like recapping that Grant Holloway won his heat in the first round of a 3-round race. Doesn't seem like a thing that needs to be said, right?
It's so let's talk about the women's hurdles, 400-meter hurdles then. The eighth qualifier, Dianca Bookman. Gordon wants to start there because he doesn't want to talk about the people who were in the front of the pack. So
you know what I mean, dude.
Third tier. Okay. Break down that third tier for me. Okay, so Sydney looked phenomenal. Shut it down way early. Obviously could have run low 53s today. We've already seen it run high 52s, but 54.07 was very impressive. Little looked really good. Muhammad looked solid. I guess if you had to just pick based on how comfort level you'd go with Sydney, there's a clear first tier and there's almost a clear second tier here. You could almost simulate the semis. We could just fast forward this right to the final and have probably the first eight there that you see, and anybody under 57 seconds moving on. I think Tate, Spencer, and Cockrell would be that next group if someone slips up, like if Little or something happens. Haley looked good. Naima Haley in that first seat, sharing 55.05. But this was mostly about seeing how healthy Muhammad is and also just how comfortable Sydney and Shamir Little looked. And I think everybody's fine. I guess we'll use this next round to see just how good they are. But they're not going to have to work really in the second round either. So this is just going to be a bunch of speculation until we get to the final.
Watching the women's 400-meter hurdle first round is like watching LeBron James play against a local YMCA rec league. It's just not real. It's not an actual race. They're just out there jogging. Sydney like can literally do a cartwheel, 10 push-ups, order a cup of coffee, and still have enough time to finish and qualify in the top three. Mm-hmm. There's just such a big drop off between being a 152 runner and a 52 second runner and a 57 second runner. 5 seconds in a one lap race is a football field. It's crazy. It's not actually a football field, but you know what I mean. And hey, if there's one thing, if I was president of track and field and they didn't give me my three trials idea, my second idea would be, hey, let's just do straight final for this woman's steeple. I mean, for this woman's 400 hurdles. Straight final. That's all we need. Straight final in the steeple too. Women's steeple and 400 hurdles, straight finals. Bring men's the top steeple. 8, top 12.
Listen. Okay.
And we'll be good.
But the men's 400 hurdles is turning into that same thing because the amount of people that put are all, either getting disqualified or are hitting hurdles is now eliminating anybody who is potentially going to be in the same frame as Rye Benjamin. So we talked yesterday, Sean Burrell hit a hurdle and went down. Quincy Hall went out. Amir Lattin got DQ'd later because he stepped on the lane. Then today,
TJ Holmes went out.
Go out. Yeah. So Rye Benjamin, again, is standing alone here in the men's 400-meter hurdles. He already was going to have a big margin of victory, and now it's going to be pretty ridiculous. It opens up spots for two other guys, but yeah, Lattin, tough break there, stepping on the line.
I mean, do you think show this Elon right there? Oh, he missed it.
Yep, there it is. No, he got it.
I'll repeat. But don't you think there should be a little bit of
You keep saying this. No, you need to, there's a line there for a reason. And on the curve, you have to not step on it. That's the rule. Otherwise, you could have people stepping over it.
But I feel like one step, is that really change the distance you run? One step?
Yes. Yes, because they measure the distance in the lane. So if you don't run in the lane, you're running less distance.
Yeah, but but here's the thing. If you do one step on the inside lane, you still will run farther than 400 meters because in order to run actually 400 meters, you probably have to have your feet on the edge of the line 100% of the time, which never happens. So one step is not all of a sudden you're running 399 meters. You're still running over 400 meters because you're not always on the exact inside of a lane for 100% of the race. So the idea that he ran shorter than everyone else, no, it's not true.
He did run shorter.
I'm playing devil's advocate here. He did. I mean, I guarantee you, if you take a tracker and you put it on his chest and everyone else,
nobody else,
I guarantee
no one else
you,
ran the line,
he will not
saying.
Be
nobody else
is the shortest distance.
And you can take that risk and run all the way on the inside and not touch and run exactly 400, or you can run a little bit farther out and run 402.6 or whatever. But the line, as the saying goes, where's the line? This is the line in track and field. You can't have a subjective rule with something like this. If you're on a straightaway, it's different. But on the curve, when you're running then less distance, you got to have it. It sucks. I want to see Amir Lattin in this race. It's unfortunate, but that's the rule. Because now you look at these times. I mean, Rye Benjamin just, what did he say? He was going 65% out there. I mean, Rye Benjamin is a sub 47 guy. And I don't think anybody, in this race is going to be within a second. I mean, if he runs 47.2, you could see a whole second before somebody else comes across the line.
I'm trying to figure out if 48.5 is 65%, what does that mean 100% would be?
He was, I don't think he was like literally saying 65.
I'm trying to figure out how to do that math. What would it be? So it's basically, let's round it up. It's 2/3. So he has an extra third of speed.
Yes. Okay. All right. Let's keep moving.
Is he going to run like a 40-second 400 hurdle? Is that how it works? I don't know.
Maybe,
I can't do the math.
Maybe.
I'm kidding. But the 400, who are you going to take after Benjamin? I think it's going to be Kenny Selman. It's good. He was 20, he won one. I think he won. Or second in a 400 hurdle at USA's?
So he won some stuff this year, and I went away from him because I went with – geez, did I go with Lattin? I don't remember who I had in my initial pick. I know I had Bassett in there who
– You had Burrell and Bassett.
Burrell. But Selman's – because I was like, oh, Selman's PB is not going to be enough to win. Well, now it is because there's no Quincy Hall, and there's no Amir Lattin, and there's no – Sean Burrell or TJ Holmes. So now he is. So I went with a flyer with Bassett from Ashland. He was the last guy in. So I guess I got to stick with him. Kinzira looked really good through 9 hurdles and then fell apart. But I think we're going to see those top three with maybe Rossier having a chance as well too. But Cameron Samuel looks good. And Selman's been solid all year. Now he just needs to run what he's been running. He doesn't need to do anything superhuman anymore because of all the DNSs and DQs in this event?
I'm looking ahead to tomorrow.
Is that what we're up to? Do you look at the rundown at all anymore? Or just
no, I don't look at the rundown.
Okay.
I look at the screen. So you don't look at the screen. So when Travis is putting up a photo of a pig, you're talking about an elephant. And when there's a photo of the elephant, you're talking about the pig.
Travis knows how to match. Travis and I have been partners with this for a long time. He knows how to anticipate my moves and where I'm going. Talk about the discus, Gordon, and then we gotta talk about Mo Farah and Wayne Colati, and then we're gonna preview tomorrow. Don't take the rundown in a direction it's not supposed to go.
Sorry, I apologize. Please forgive me. Men's discus, Mason Finley, Reggie Yeagers, and Sam Mattis all make the team. They all have the standard. They were the favorites. Makes sense that they'll do well up there. They had like a fun fact that Sam Mattis like gave up working on real estate. Not real estate. Gave up on working on Wall Street to pursue his discus throw Olympic dream. So good for him. He's going to the Tokyo, going to Olympics. Hopefully he comes back and gets into Bitcoin or GameStop or something like that to kind of make up for time lost. I guess that's what he has to do. But yeah, Finley, I don't really know much about the discus. Hey, it's hard to know everything about all 18 events. Mm-hmm. The names look familiar. They were good in college. I recognize the names. I think Sam Mattis is Penn, right? He went to Penn?
Yeah. He went to Penn. Yeah. Put some, if you got questions in the chat, put them in there now. Let's talk about, first of all, Wayne Colati's transfer of allegiance got approved. So we talked yesterday about her being cleared to compete in the meet because she just got her citizenship. But this is another big step because they had to present to World Athletics to transfer her allegiance. That's all gone through. As you can see, this was just this week. This was on Wednesday. Wayne Colati at the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services building. There's a really good article, if you guys haven't read it, from Adam Kilgore of the Washington Post. Breaks down the whole story. It was a bureaucratic marathon, to say the least, but she'll be on the line, and if she finishes in the top three, she will be able to compete because World Athletics has approved for her transfer of allegiance. So good news for Wayne Colati and just a great story like you outlined yesterday, Gordon.
Yeah, you see there... I guess getting sworn in. I'm guessing she probably said the Pledge of Allegiance. Do you remember the last time you've said the Pledge of Allegiance? And do you remember it?
I do remember the Pledge of Allegiance. I don't remember the last time. Well, I used to work in high school, so I'm going to say 2017 is the last time I said it. But yeah, she had to take the citizenship test. Excuse me. She had to. The issue was the fingerprints were in D.C. and they needed to get to Albuquerque, or Albuquerque and they needed to get D.C. Her lawyer was a guy, Joe Franklin, her New Mexico coach, met when he was coaching at Butler, and the guy ran for Indiana, I believe. There's all these crazy coincidences, and they got senators involved. Long story short, she will be on the start line in the morning because it's going to be a morning race. It's going to be hot this weekend, and it's super, super exciting to see her actually.
Wait, so this photo, is that photo from today?
They said Wednesday was. I mean, they might have posted today, but the Kilgore story said Wednesday was when she was doing the test. So I don't know what the process is between the test and the official paperwork and the swearing. But
so I was thinking, if this photo was taken yesterday, she's just literally just arrived in Eugene, right? Like,
yeah,
just got hopped on a flight from Albuquerque.
You hear about these. Okay. So Alon, our producer, tells us, Alon, you should turn your mic on, Alon, so you can say this. you take the test, and then if you pass, they swear you in. Like a day later, Alon? 2 days later?
So now everybody can hear me. I had to take this in 2014. They schedule you in to go take a test and an interview. Once you pass the test, they then schedule you to come in and get sworn in. It can be either like a day or a week. It depends on however their schedule works.
And I'm sure they fast-tracked it for her because they're like, yo, we got to get her in the Olympic trials. She could make the team. But producer Alon makes his debut. Round of applause, everybody out there.
Yeah, well, I want to know. You took the test.
Can you replace Gordon?
What's one of the questions?
Like full-time, Alon?
What's like an example? What's an example question on the citizenship test?
The hardest question I got was, what year was the Constitution ratified?
Gordon, do you know?
The only date I know is 1776. So, but that doesn't make sense because that's Declaration.
Deported.
That's Declaration of Independence.
Deported. So. It's 1787, scrub.
I was gonna say
1787.
Called him a scrub.
Deported. Deported. Get out.
Wow. More Elon on the pod. More Elon. Okay.
Can you name like every president? Is that like a thing you have to know? Like memorize the order of the presidents or something like that?
I studied I overstudied for it. I knew even like state flowers and stuff, but they never asked me about any of that.
Damn. State flowers. Yeah. Okay.
State flowers.
There we go.
What's a Texas state flower?
It's the blue bonnet, right? It's
the purple one, right? What's it called? Blue bell? Blue bonnet?
Blue bonnet, yeah. I think. It's blue though, right? Yeah. I mean, I had to take a similar thing for teaching. It wasn't the citizen, it was something where it was like basic civics. And there's an amazing amount of things that you don't know that you think that you should know. So again, anyway. Congrats to her. Very excited to see her race. Man, now the chat, everybody's talking about like citizenship process in here. This is taking a turn. Okay. Mo Farah, Gordon. He had one last chance to get the Olympic standard in the 10K to come back to try to get another gold medal and defend his title. He missed it. He ran 27:47. So we may have seen the last of Mo Farah on the track. This is something I did not think would be an issue. I thought obviously getting a medal would be really hard. Getting a gold would be extremely hard, but I never really thought that he wouldn't be able to get the standard. Does this surprise you?
What time did he run?
27:47.
Would that have qualified in 2016? Let's see.
That's the big takeaway.
Yeah, 28 flat was the Olympic standard in 2016. Okay. So that's the big factor. Like they made the Olympic standard so much harder this time around that to get an Olympic standard, you have to be super, super fit, especially in a 10K because they don't want a big field because they want to do a straight final, I think. So I think that's basically what did him in. If his career was just like shifted 4 years in the past and he was trying to, at old age, trying to make the 2016 Olympics after winning all of his medals, it would have been a lot easier, obviously. So he's just kind of a casualty of the change of standarding of the Olympics.
Change of standarding. Interesting mm-hmm. there. We got some comments in the chat. They still want to talk about the Jamaican trials, Gordon. I saw.
Oh, yeah.
Well, semis. Are we getting the finals tonight? Because semis, Sharika Jackson dropped the 10:77. So the year of the women's 100 continues. I think we're going to go. I think we're going to do more Jamaican trials.
Do we have results anywhere? Do we have results anywhere? I don't even know where to look.
I'm just searching on Twitter.
JamaicaTrials.com?
No, I typed in Jamaican trials. Actually, something just popped up. The 10:77 popped up on my screen right now. So next, we're gonna break it all down next week. It's not like we're not gonna do shows next week. That's what I'm saying. Okay. What else? Wind legal. Someone wants to know, was it wind legal? Yeah, plus 0.9 for Jackson. Williams was 11:02. Kemba Nelson was 11:06. So Gordon will find a
lot. Like, is Fraser Price like clinched? I guess.
I don't know. Someone in the chat, help us out here. We've been way too focused. Oh, the finals are coming soon. So this is going to be outdated in like an hour by the time this gets posted. Okay. But the folks on YouTube.
So we'll save it for maybe we can talk
Where's
about
Shelly-Ann?
It. With,
Where's Shelly?
We can talk about it with Serenity tomorrow. We'll be fine.
Yes.
Yeah, sorry, guy. Okay. We'll be on it tomorrow or the next day. Death heat. I want to talk. There's only one death heat tomorrow. The men's 200 prelims, second round. Let's bring it up.
Ooh, who's in that?
Get ready. Here we go. Men's semi. It's all the way at the bottom, Travis. Boom. The death heat is heat two. You got Laird, you got Knighton, and Lyles all in the same heat.
And then one, you got Curly Bednarik. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be another race for Noah Lyles to – he didn't have many 200s under his belt this year. Really hasn't run that many of them. So I think he's counting on getting pushed in these rounds. So I think he certainly will have that again. So you don't have any death heats in the, let's see what's left. Men's high hurdles? No. Men's 4-meter hurdles? Well, that'll be a final for the men's 4-meter hurdles. And then women's 10K in the morning. Do you want to revise any of your predictions?
I guess women's 400-meter hurdles has a little bit of a death. Little, Muhammad, Spencer, Cockrell, all in the same heat.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a little bit. That's a little deathly. And then just McLaughlin in the other heat.
That's scary.
Actually, that's the bigger death.
Which one? Oh.
The heat two of 400 hurdles.
Yeah. Yeah. Little, Muhammad, Spencer, Cockrell. Yeah. Well, you get like Haley ran really well. She was second to Sydney in that heat, and she ran 55.0. So then, so she was like the number two seed essentially. Like she ran the second fastest time. So, but she's not one of the big names there. Okay. I'm seeing Shelly-Ann ran. Someone in the chat put this. Anthony. Elaine and Shelly jogged 10:83. But then Someone says 10:84. Oh, Elaine 10:82. Fraser Price 10:84. Jamaica's going to send a team. It's going to be amazing. Women's 100 is going to be awesome at the Olympic Games. It's going to be great. I'm really excited.
Do you think Jamaican women might smoke us in the 4x1?
Yeah, there's a chance. I think there's always going a chance that Jamaican women are going to smoke.
I think this might be because a lot of times it's like the Jamaican men smoking the men and then the U.S. women smoking everyone else. Maybe we see like a little inverse there where all of a sudden
did you watch men 4x1
dominate and then the
I
women.
You weren't at the,
what?
I know you weren't at the 2019. Do you know what happened there?
I forget, to be honest, man. It was a long time ago.
Well, it just the Jamaican men have not been as good, right?
Yeah.
Like go through the world list and find the top four Jamaican times, and then you'll wonder why they're having such issues here to put any resistance up against the U.S. But on the flip side, the women are super solid, and Thompson, Hurrah running well, and Jackson running well in combination with Fraser Price PRing is insane. But yeah, the men got the win in 2019. The U.S. men got the win in 2019, and they look pretty good doing it, like with young pieces, right? So
yeah. All right, you want to say one last thing? What was the last thing you want to talk about? Oh, tomorrow's 10K? 10K, I guess?
Oh, I want to know if you want to change any picks or anything. But if not, we don't have to talk about it if you don't want to.
Who did I pick in my 10K? Let's scroll that up. Bring that up. Women's 10K. What do we got? I went Schweizer, Kraney, Schneider. So basically the 5K. And for the record, I would have put Cranny in the 5K, but I put her in the 15 because you know how this goes. People don't declare normally, and it's all weird. So I still get credit for picking Cranny. That's how it works.
Don't sleep on Kaladi. Don't sleep on Kaladi. That'll be a fun one. All right. So we'll be back. What's the start time tomorrow? The final event tomorrow is 7:51 Pacific time. So that's. We'll be starting at about
10 o'clock.
8 Pacific, so 10 p.m. Central, 11 p.m. on the East Coast. We'll have Serenity back again by popular demand to break down the sprints. By that point, the 10K will have been 12 hours old because they're running it in the morning. So we'll have a lot of practice talking about the 10K, but we got all those finals tomorrow in the men's high hurdles, the women's two, the men's 4-meter hurdles, also women's long jump, women's pole vault, javelin, and hammer throw. But we'll leave it there for tonight. Thank you to Alon for producing and some expert insight too that he gave us. Thanks to Travis also for producing. Subscribe to the Flow Track podcast. Come back and join us tomorrow for the penultimate day of track and field at the US Olympic Trials. See you then.